Hey guys, Jake Carlson here, host of the Modern Leadership Podcast. Are you ready to focus on amplifying your leadership superpowers? Let's go. Good morning, my friends and fellow elite achievers. Welcome to Modern Leadership, the podcast where each week we sit down with authors, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders to explore their journey. We dive into the ups, their downs, and ultimately the lessons they learned along the way. Our goal, of course, is to show that everything is figureoutable. Today's guest expert is Jeff Gibbard, formerly known as the world's most handsome social media and content marketing strategist. Our guest today now goes by another title, superhero. He is the author of The Lovable Leader, a professional speaker, and the founder of several companies, including Super Productive and the Superhero Institute. Jeff also hosts the popular Shareable podcast, and today he is our modern leader. Jeff, welcome to the show. How are you?
I am lovely. Thanks for having me.
Well, you are the lovable leader, so it stands to reason that you should be lovely at this great hour that we record this podcast.
Yeah, I'm feeling good. I'm feeling good. Excited to chat.
All right, my friend, let's jump in the DeLorean a little bit, go back in time, and let's find out who Jeff is on a personal level. Why don't you share with us kind of what life looks like for you outside of Shareable and all the business you got going on?
So the most important thing that's on my agenda at the moment is that my wife and I are expecting our second child. We have a girl already who's in the background right now at bath time, and we're expecting a little baby boy coming in the next 2 weeks or so, and we're pretty excited about that. So that's the most important thing I got going on right now, and as that's happening, I'm trying to tie up as many loose ends at work as I can. As you mentioned in my intro, I have a lot of different lines of business and things I do, so I'm trying to make sure I prioritize and get all the most important things ready.
Yeah. And would you say that you have a primary business, or are all of them kind of just balls that you're juggling?
I would say if I had a primary business, it would be as a solopreneur, speaker, trainer, and consultant. But it's tough to say because a lot of my time right now is tied up in one of my lines of business in Super Productive, which is a productivity consulting firm. I have a partner in that. We have a small team that we're growing. We just started about a year ago and we're growing it pretty steadily.
Now let's take a visit back in the past a little bit. Did you always know, like, let's look like 14, 15, 18 years old, that you wanted to be an entrepreneur? What was your mindset like back then, thinking, hey, this is what I'm going to do and be as I grow and mature?
Yeah, I'm kind of two minds about the entrepreneur thing because it's kind of a loaded word and it's like a very buzzy term out in the world. And I think some people kind of hold it up as this thing that's so different. And I think in some ways it really is. But I think in other ways, everybody has in them a little bit of that entrepreneurial spirit. I just think some have it kind of, I guess, a more aggressive case of it than others. So I think I've really had the entrepreneurial bug my entire life. I have not partly done well with authority at any point in my life. And I think that was really one of the big starting points of, if I'm going to do a thing, I'm going to do it for me. So I think one point is the authority piece. The idea of being told, no, you can't pursue that thing that you're really excited and passionate about is just really difficult for me. So that's the first thing. The second thing being that I just have a lot of interests. So as someone with a lot of interests, it's really difficult to imagine kind of having a very linear career path. So as you mentioned, like, do you have a primary thing? Yeah, I do, but I also have so many of these other things that I'm interested in. So if I go all the way back to it, I think you could see the early beginnings of it in school, and you could see it in terms of all of the different types of career paths that I always said, oh, I want to be that when I grow up. And as that changed from thing to thing, you could see that there was a through line of, well, Jeff really just wants to work for himself and have that freedom.
Yeah. So our audience is listening to this in their car, on their earbuds, whatever it may be. They can't see the world's most handsome social media and content marketing strategist. Talk to us a little bit about that title. Where did it come from?
So I learned early on in my entrepreneurial journey. So after coming out of my MBA in 2008, going and working for a company, and then eventually, you know, long story short, starting up my own agency, I learned very early on that being memorable is a very useful piece of the puzzle. If people can remember you, that's kind of one of the early pieces of being able to be successful, because you need them to remember you when it comes time that they need what you offer. So just on a whim, you know, you A/B test things, you try stuff out. At one point, I had changed my LinkedIn headline. I had just gotten these new headshots done from a buddy of mine. And there's this one headshot that I got done where I'm like totally cheesing it up. And I totally have the face of like, oh, look how handsome I am.
Yes.
And it's like, it's, Yo, it came out so good though. The lighting, the everything about it, just I really looked very like debonair and handsome. I had lost a bunch of weight, so I was looking really good. So I put up the photo and I was like, you know what? I'm the world's most handsome social media and content marketing strategist. And that went like on fire. People still to this day, my wife manages a WeWork, and people will still come in and be like, oh my God, are you married to Jeff? You know, world's most handsome social media and content marketing strategist. And it just gets a lot of play. And part of it is that it's just absurd enough. It's just tongue in cheek enough that people realize that I'm kind of being playful with it. It, you know, it's obviously not being serious, but it's enough that people remember it because it stands out. It's not like CEO of True Voice Media, which was my company at the time, which who remembers that, right? Right. World's most handsome social media and content marketing strategist. They're like, oh, well, you know that guy.
Yeah, I love this story. And I was hoping you would share it kind of down that path because I agree. I mean, we have to be memorable. And I got to be honest with you, on our podcast, we get between 5 and 10 requests every day for people to come on and be guests of the show. And we just can't take them all. We're a weekly podcast. And yep. So how do we identify who's going to make a good fit for the show? Well, obviously people who have good backgrounds, good stories, but something's got to pop. Something's got to say, hey, I think this would be unique and different. And so we got Jeff on the show talk about this. And now we got to transition a little bit because you and I both love superheroes. We love talking about superpowers and so forth. Talk to us a little bit about what you're doing, the direction that you've headed with leadership and superheroes and superpowers.
Yeah, it's funny when I found your show and when sent over the one pager and everything, I was like, oh, this is a lock. Like, we're going to geek out. It's going to be amazing. Because leadership and superheroes, right? Like when you have those two things as an interest, it's like...
And you're sitting in the Marvel chair. I can see it right now.
Yeah, I got my Spider-Man chair and I got Spider-Man stuff everywhere. My daughter's obsessed as well. So for me, like the whole superhero thing is... I could go really deep into the philosophy of like the ethics of superheroism and like all of that stuff. But like if we just take it on its surface, like superheroes being avatars for those who want to go out and protect others and make the world a better place and make it safer. I love that idea. And I've been into superheroes since I was like, you know, microscopic. I was like just out of the womb and I was into superheroes. So I've been about it my whole life. And if you look at the trajectory of my career, it makes perfect sense that I've arrived here at this, you know, like Marvel does phases. I consider this like my phase 7, I guess. And in this phase is when I discovered that superheroes was really the through line of so much of what I'm about, which is on the one hand, superpowers, the idea of like having abilities and developing those abilities. And then the idea of becoming superhuman, the ability to acquire consistently new abilities and grow and get better and get stronger and have more capabilities and more abilities to do things and affect change, and then becoming a superhero that is using those powers for good. It all made sense to me and it all clicked after I left my last agency. So I did a lot of soul searching to kind of come around to that. And really what the connection point is between leadership and the superheroes is that I want to be able to use my position in life to help others unleash their potential, learn the skills that they need so that they can make a positive impact in the world. That's me exhibiting my leadership and giving people the tools so that they can exhibit their leadership, because I think that's how we affect change in the world, is by people standing up and saying, either I've had enough, or this isn't right, or this is the right way. And they go out and they kind of make that dent in the universe. And I'm all about that. I'm about leaving behind a legacy and leaving an impact.
Now, would it be safe to say that through that soul searching and kind of background work that you did, you discovered your superpower, and now you go out and everybody that you encounter has a superpower within them. It's something that they can develop and grow. Maybe they haven't identified it. Maybe they haven't seen it. Maybe they felt the little spider tinglings of it. And then you help them to unleash it, to identify it, and to really cultivate it so that it can be used, as we talked about, superheroes for the betterment of their families, their businesses, those around them.
Yeah, I think that's a fair way of putting it. And one thing that I've noticed is that in my experience of interacting with people, something that I have noticed that people tend to like about being around me is that I make people feel good about themselves. I find ways of identifying characteristics in them that are unique, that are interesting, that are extraordinary in some way that maybe they themselves didn't even think was unique or extraordinary or interesting. And I boost that up. And kind of part of the underlying secret of all super, you know, super individuals, whether they be super villains or superheroes, is that the other side of their extraordinary ability is deep pain and trauma, is there's always something on the other side that we're working against, right? That we are fighting against some sort of fear or some sort of villain that we need to overcome. And for me, it's things like injustice. For me, it's things about leading a life of insignificance. And these are my ways of trying to work out the fight against those things. Is like, I want to make sure that my life has meaning and that I leave behind a dent and that I touch the people around me in a positive way. I'm deeply sensitive to injustice in the world. So when I see it, I want to use whatever power and privilege I have to try and dismantle that and make the world a safer, kinder, more equitable place. So that's what I try to see in others. It's like, what's the thing that hurts for them? And then I try to figure out the thing that is the antithesis of that. And I help to build them up so that they can basically go to war with whatever the villain is that they're fighting.
Now, one of the things that I heard you say is this leading a life of insignificance and how this is, you know, something that you're on a crusade to kind of get rid of, to abolish lives of insignificance. And that sounds a little bit daunting, especially for individuals that are struggling. I mean, we all go through ups and down, peaks and valleys in our career development, in our families, in our lives. And for those out there listening that may be feeling like they're, you know, being overlooked, that they're lonely, that they're missing out on opportunities, that they're being overlooked on promotions, or especially as we've just come out of COVID and we have a lot of people working from home, there's not that water cooler, the connection is gone. What do we say to people that are feeling that insignificance, and how do we approach a way to lead out of that?
Absolutely. And a great question. And it leads to something that I have to clarify, which is that I don't have any value judgment about what is a life of significance, right? Like, whatever is significant to you is what is significant to you. And I think that the most important thing is that people feel that the work that they do matters, that they themselves are enough, that the things that make them uniquely them are extraordinary in and of them, their own rights. You know, I'm someone who, I was diagnosed with ADHD, not late in life, like many people. I was diagnosed in like early 20s, late teens, but there still wasn't a lot of awareness around it. But it still led me through a life of masking a lot of the gifts that I have in trying to fit in and trying to pretend that I could be something that I'm not. And I really wish that people never had to go through that, where they could just be who they are and be accepted for those gifts. So when you look at people who maybe feel insignificant or maybe feel like they're not able to make the impact that they want to be able to, I think the first step is recognizing something that is extraordinary in yourself, is like finding that most unique individual thing. It could be how you interact with a good friend of yours. It's how you show up in your family. It's how you show up in your friendships. It's how you show up at work, or the pride that you take in your community groups or in your church or wherever is important to you. It's finding that moment where you feel your best self, where you feel like you're letting your superpowers shine. And I think that the biggest crime for anyone is to live a life and look back on it and feel like they didn't fully express what was meaningful to them. And whatever that is, again, I have no judgment about it. It's more that it pains me to think of anyone missing the opportunity to find the thing that's important to them and express that and live freely and live openly, chasing and pursuing whatever that passion might be. And that's not to discount the difficulties of, you know, living in the society and just trying to get by. Like, there's all of the issues of like debt and healthcare and sick loved ones and all of the things that come up. All of those things are real absolute obstacles. I'm not discounting them at all. But to say that even in spite of anything that's going on, looking for that thing that makes you feel like you're fully expressed and you're doing something that's meaningful to you.
And I love what you said about you're not putting a value judgment on what significance is. But I think there's a lot of listeners that feel like the world, the society, their community, their boss, or their work environment is putting a value judgment on what significance is. They are defining, this is what success is, or this is what promotability is, or this is what intelligence is. And then we internalize that and feel like that is significance for us. So I love this idea that, right, your significance could be very different from what mine is, what my neighbor's is, what my children is, and so forth. And I wonder, you know, we see this going back to our superhero and our love and passion for the superhero. We look at all the superheroes that we've seen on the big screen lately, you know, the Spider-Mans and the Iron Mans and the Hulks and the even Batmans, and all these people are flawed. They have quirks about them that we think they're a little bit nerdy or they're a little bit broken in some way. And somehow we feel like that's okay for them, but we don't feel like it's okay for us. So I love what you're saying about we need to find something that we can latch onto. But how do we do that when we're surrounded, it feels like, by people kind of putting us down, even though that we've seen these examples of people who have moved on and up from that?
there's no question that being a human is, you would simply are going to live an imperfect existence. And there is no question that each of us, whatever our lot in life, is going to have something that feels like the greatest struggle in the world to us, right? Like, no one has it easy, though there are many who have it easier. And I guess what I would say is that there are a tremendous number of forces out there that will make it difficult and that are problems that we need to overcome. And I think that the lot of being a superhero is not necessarily to, it is to acknowledge and understand what is our unique trauma that we have to deal with. So some people have to deal with racism or sexism or misogyny or transphobia or any number of other phobias or isms. And some of us don't have the privilege of avoiding a lot of those things, but all of us have something that we have to struggle with and we have to overcome. And I guess what my hope is in the work that I do is to encourage everyone to look for the ways that we can just pursue better. That to me is the superheroism that I'm generally talking about, is for each of us to try and look for that way where we can make it palpably better for ourselves, but also for the, you know, affecting the material conditions of those around us and trying to create a more equitable world.
And it's important to recognize that everybody, no matter what level of success you have placed on them, you know, as you look to your boss or you look to those around us, athletes and movie stars or whoever we look up to for whatever reason, it's important to recognize that they all experience some level of imposter syndrome. And now as we come back to superheroes and comic books and this group that you and I are geeking out about, they alter identity. Right. I mean, even these superheroes have some sense of imposter syndrome when it comes to their powers and how they relate to the world and how they help other people. Talk to us a little bit about the imposter syndrome and how that can be both a strength and a weakness in our lives.
I think that I don't think I've ever met anyone who feels like they've just got it together, right? Like that, like it's all going perfectly. I think we all, no matter what happens, get to a certain point where, and I think especially the more you know about something, the less likely you are to feel like you really belong or that you know it all, because you have a sense of like how much you don't know. I think it's the people who are at the beginning of that Dunning-Kruger curve that think that they know everything, that those are the ones that you're in a brief period of time before the fall where you feel like you're good and you belong. And it's everybody else who, no matter how good of a speaker you are, you see another speaker and you're like, wow, that person was incredible. Or like, no matter how good of a strategist you are, you find someone, you're like, wow, they are so brilliant. So I think it's the natural tendency of human beings to compare ourselves to one another. And there's a benefit to that in that we aspire to be greater in some ways when we see people who are inspiring to us that have achieved something that we wish to achieve. The problem is that when we see someone else's success as a reflection on ourselves, because it's simply not. We're all in our own journey. We're all in our own fight. We all have our own conditions. We have all have our own traumas. We all have our own strengths and abilities. We're all going to go about this thing differently. And again, like as someone who grew up masking so much because of my ADHD, I feel like I had superpowers that I was hiding for years because I was too scared to admit that I also had these other vulnerabilities and weaknesses. So the more we can be authentic and communicate with one another, and I think the reason this doesn't happen is because it's just simply not safe. Like that's the truth of it, is that as leaders, we have to create safe environments for people to communicate openly about their needs and their boundaries and be able to talk about what it is that allows them to thrive.
And mistakes that they make.
Exactly. We have to make it safe to fail. And if it's not, then no one's going to want to, right? So when we have that environment to do that, then we start to see things begin to change a little bit. Now, all of a sudden, we no longer have to hide behind and pretend that we're someone that we're not, which leads to false expectations anyway. When we can just clearly say, here's what I need to thrive, and here's what I'm good at, and here's what I'm not, that's just such a better way to live, to have that kind of openness.
All right, let's transition just a little bit. Let's dive into your book. So we've got the lovable leader here, and it sounds a little soft and squishy, the lovable leader, but it's good. Not, right?
Yeah.
This is good leadership skills here. Talk to us about the lovable leader, why you felt at the time it was written, it needed to be written.
So I wrote the book about the type of leader that I think we all want to work with. We want to be led by. And I tried to gather up everything that I've collected over the years and tried to put together what I believe is the journey to get there. Now, the thing about the title, The Lovable Leader, is a couple things that immediately come off. When I say I wrote a book called The Lovable Leader, they go, oh, well, that's arrogant. Like, how could you think that you're just so lovable? And okay, let me be clear. I'm not saying I am. I'm saying this is an aspirational.
It's aspirational, yeah.
An aspirational destination is where we're trying to get to, right? And the other thing is kind of to your point, when you hear love at work, you think, oh, well, that's squishy. We're not at work to love. We're at work to accomplish and drive.
Let's get business done. We got bottom lines. Yeah,
we got profits to make, right? Well, you know what? There's enough books about that. And there's enough in every corner of the world that we inhabit, especially if you're a listener in the United States. Like everywhere we go, we are judging ourselves based upon our ability to generate capital for someone else generally. So if that's the case, we don't need me to create another chapter in that book. We need other chapters. We need people to start thinking about other things. What's missing? What's lacking? Well, I think what's really lacking in most companies, in most work environments, if you kind of look at the meme of what it is to go to kind of quote unquote work, right? Like when we talk about work, what is it? So, oh, I got to go to work the Mondays. Thank God it's Friday, right? Like it's become a meme where it's a thing we have to do. And we can go down a whole rabbit hole around like, you know, labor and compensation and all of these different things. But I think ultimately we're talking about people dealing with people. And when it comes to that, there's some really fundamental things there. Trust, respect, kindness, care, direct, kind communication. Like there's all of these things that if we just did some of these things without changing everything else, if we were to just focus on this, and I think we should change everything else, but if we're just going to make work marginally better and to have leaders that we want to work with and we would follow from one company to another, the formula is actually pretty simple. We just have to create environments where we feel cared for, where we feel safe to pursue our highest ambitions, where we feel like we have trust with the people we work with and we're not fearful for our livelihood while we're at work. We just need to create environments where we feel safe.
And it's interesting that we're having this conversation now when right now in history, in our time period, we just come out of this period of the Great Resignation, which was, you know, something that was on a lot of minds and a lot of talk and a lot of podcasts, where people were leaving work to go to other experiences, other opportunities, other jobs, other formats. And how do we keep people on our team? And then we look at what you just said, being open, allowing people to fail, giving people experiences to develop their superpowers and to be able to have an impact and feel significant. These are all the ways that we keep the good employees. All I hear as I go and do my coaching, as I go and sit down with people in the business world is good people are hard to find. There are way more jobs open right now for good people than there are good people applying or being found. So this is one of the ways that we can do that. Talk to us about the relationship between keeping and finding talent as a business owner and as a leader, and this idea of being lovable. And maybe we're not talking about such squishy topics, but being a respected leader or something, somebody that someone wants to work for.
I love the idea of anyone saying out loud or thinking that the problem is that there aren't enough good people. I would argue that there are great people everywhere. I meet good people, great people all the time. I'm more likely to think that people are good and great and capable than I am to think that they're not. I think the problem, by and large, time and time again, is that we create the wrong environment for people. We have the wrong expectations for people. We hold people to the wrong standards, and we don't give people the environments to thrive. That's actually what I think the problem is. It's not a lack of good people, because I've been in a lot of jobs where I was not a good people. And I can assure you, I am damn good at what I do. Across all the things that I do, I am damn good at it. The problem is I was far too often being asked to do things that I am not good at. And I wasn't given an environment to be safe enough to say the things that I'm not good at. And all across this country, across small companies, big companies, consulting companies, healthcare companies, everything, we are dealing with a crisis of work environments. And I think that there are good people everywhere. And I think partly it's work environment. And I think partly we also have to acknowledge that if people are going home after whatever that good day's work is, whatever it is that they do, and they don't have enough money to be able to comfortably afford a place to live, to send their kids to school, to be able to pay for daycare, to be able to pay for food, to be able to pay for all of the necessities and things of life, and then they go into a job and that job is part of the reason they're not able to afford that, good people, not good people, what's the real issue here? Is that these are people that are just going to it. It's a transaction at the end of the day. A job is I come in, I give you my labor, you give me enough to do what I need to do. And when that contract is broken. There are no good people. There's just bad arrangements. So I guess I would look at it and say our first step is we have to re-examine the work contract, how we set up work environments, who benefits from all of this labor, and are we spreading it equitably enough so that people can bring their best selves to work and actually be the good people that we've been looking for?
And I think everything that you're saying can be identified as either a doom loop or an upward spiral, because if we were to approach this idea of we just need to pay people more, your business owners are going to push back and say, with what money? I mean, our margins are already thin, but yep, this can be an upward spiral. We treat people better. They're happy to come to work. Happy people bring on referrals. Happy people make sales. Happy people create products that are worthy of standing in lines for. And then that produces money. Money produces the ability to pay, and it can be an upward spiral. Or we can find ourselves caught in this doom loop that basically says, I can't afford to pay them, therefore I'm going to pay them less, therefore they're going to come to work, maybe not do as much sales. We're hearing this thing now where people are quiet quitting, where they're only going to do what they were paid to do when they come to work. Talk to us a little bit about this idea of maybe a doom spiral or doom loop of people that are quiet quitting in the workforce today.
Yeah. I mean, my whole LinkedIn feed right now is completely saturated with the quiet quitting conversation. And I think it's so interesting that the definition of quiet quitting, when I was like, I kept seeing it, and I was like, all right, let me look into this. And it was like, it was people doing only what they're paid for. And I was like, I mean, I don't even understand what the problem is here. That is what a job is.
That's
that
a work. Yeah, that's work.
That's the job, right?
You pay me, I do what you pay me for. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of like, imagine just flipping it around entirely. And like, instead of the owners saying like, people won't do more than I pay them for. Well, are you going to pay them more than what they're doing? Because that's the other side of this conversation. Yeah. Is like, what if you overpaid people to do not enough work? Like, it sounds ridiculous there too, right? So I think what we're talking about is we're talking about setting healthy boundaries. We're talking about choosing to not negatively impact your mental health or your physical health or your emotional health to give to a company that's not necessarily rewarding you back. So personally, I love that quiet quitting has become a conversation. I just wish that more of the conversation was focused on how do we actually, instead of blaming employees for not going above and beyond for not enough of a salary, because you know some of the value of their labor is being taken by the owners of the company anyway. Instead of that, why don't we talk about how do we get people to actually be re-engaged? It's funny how much of the conversation at work is always focused on the people at the lower end of the arrangement, how it's always their fault. You know, I would flip it around and say, as leaders, it is always our job to try and figure out how to make things better, how to make things more equitable, how to engage people, how to treat people with more fairness and kindness. That's our job. And if we then do that, and then we get to benefit from that at some later stage, that's great. But if we're just going to take advantage of people and then blame them for not going above and beyond, that to me just seems silly. I cannot even wrap my head around the people who are legitimately frustrated about the quiet quitting thing when people are just like, I'm just going to go home at 5 o'clock like I'm paid for.
Yeah, I love it. Well, if we had an hour on the podcast, we could dive into so many more topics, but I look at our clock and we're running out, and there's two things that I still want to talk about. One is the new She-Hulk. Have you watched it?
I have watched the new She-Hulk.
Okay, we're going to philosophize about it, but we're going to do that in just a minute, because before we jump into that, I want to ask you about Super Productive, what you're doing, and give us a little teaser on what we can find out if we go visit your website or go figure out what Super Productive, how it would apply to us.
Yeah, so all of my companies are super companies. So I have a bunch of businesses that I'm starting that are all super something, right? So the Superhero Institute, I have Super Productive. I have a couple more I'm working on. So Super Productive is a partnership that I started with my business partner, Sarah, she's a productivity consultant, productivity coach, and she is on the neurotypical side of things. I'm neurodivergent. I've found coping strategies and productivity strategies that help me to do a mass number of things. And she has her way. And we both are Asana certified pros. So we've been using Asana for a better part of a decade for both of us. And we got certified as pros. And then we basically started this business just like we were like, yeah, we should do this. That'll be fun. Like, we'll both get certified. We'll both do it. We'll join forces. It'll be great.
And when you say Asana, you're talking about the productivity app.
Yeah. The productivity
app. I use it. I can't live without it. Yep. We use it to manage all of the tasks in my law firm. It's our task management solution.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. You know, again, as somebody with ADHD, I can't live without a task manager and a calendar. So I've been using Asana for years. So we both know the system inside and out. I'm more like the strategist and builder, and she's more of like the keep the trains on the track, consistency, talking to the the clients, managing our team, all that sort of stuff. So we basically just put together this really beautifully well-oiled machine. Like, as an entrepreneur, you will love, if you saw what we did, we basically built the business in a weekend. We went to a WeWork, we got a bunch of coffee, and we built a business. And then out of the gate, we've only been doing this for a year and a half. The business is like heavy six figures at this point, because we just like took off like a rocket. We just start getting leads. We convert 80% of people that come to us and ask for a proposal. And most of our clients are in for either 2 months, 4 months, or 6 months, but we have ones that have been with us for, you know, a little over a year at this point. And it's just been a phenomenal thing. We build this on a workspaces. We also work with Notion and ClickUp and Monday.com. And we just build ways of essentially creating productivity systems for both neurotypical and neurodivergent people so that the system works for both.
I love it. I love it. And we could dive way more into that, because I have my frustrations, but my love for Asana as well. But with the little bit of time we have left, I want to philosophize with you just for a couple of minutes about She-Hulk. So She-Hulk's this interesting show. We don't want to do any spoilers for anybody who's watching it or catching up on it or whatnot. But what I love about it is you've got a superhero that has superhero ability, you know, abilities to super strength and so forth, but doesn't want to use those. Wants to use her education, her background, her law degree to go into the courtroom and be an advocate for those who need justice. And I love this idea. It's kind of the reverse of what we see in most superhero movies, which is they have a normal job and then they escape their normal job to go be the hero. She's a hero that wants to escape being a hero to do a normal job. And I want to philosophize with you a little bit how the Superhero Institute would take a look at that kind of idea, that concept.
Oh, wow. You switched it up at the end with the Superhero Institute and how we look at it. So, I mean, I guess on the one hand, I would look at what is her original superpower, and we would start off there. And then we would look at, well, how does being a She-Hulk or not being a She-Hulk help her to continually enhance and grow as a superhuman? And then now that she has the She-Hulk abilities plus her original intellect and original superpowers, how is she using that to make the world a better place? And there's, you've been watching it, but you know, there's a scene at which she had been trying to suppress it. And then she decides to let it out because it was a situation that called for it. So I would say through, you know, the lens of the Superhero Institute, we have the superhero code, which are the 10 principles of what makes a superhero. And I would say that throughout the course of the show, she's exhibited most, if not all of those attributes. And I would say, you know, she definitely fits the bill of what a superhero is. The thing I find most interesting about the show is I do think that some of the writing could be a little better, but Marvel's in a phase where they're trying to churn out tons of content. So
yeah.
I think they're cutting a little bit of corners here and there, but I still enjoy everything superhero. But I do enjoy the layer of what it is to be a woman in society, a woman in law, a woman in a male-dominated profession, all of those sorts of things. I think that layer of the show, as it intersects with being a super strong superhero and the expectations that come from being a Hulk, I think all of that is probably the most interesting thing to me in the show. So that's been what I've been enjoying, is like, I'm always interested in like the various levels of like meta commentary that are happening throughout these shows.
Yeah. And I think there's a lot of podcasts that go in and go down that rabbit hole that we just kind of scratched the surface of. Jeff, this has been a blast. This has been so much fun. Before we let you go, how can we find out? We want to hear the code of the Superhero Institute code of what you've got going on. Where can we find out more about this? How can we connect with you? How can we go to the next level?
So I make it really easy to find me. Because I have so many projects, for a while, I used to get on shows and like be like, here's my 15 links you can go and look at. At some point, I decided it'd probably be a lot easier if I just consolidated everything into one place.
Yeah.
So I created this site, jgibbard.com, just jgibbard.com. And it's sort of a menu that takes you to all of the different things I do. So if you want to see the things I'm doing non-professionally, you can see that. If you want to see my products, if you want to see my content, if you want to work with me, all of it kind of leads you down the path of what are you really interested in? So it's sort of a decision tree of how do you want to learn more about Jeff? So the one site I always give now is just jgibbard.com. It'll lead you to anything you're interested in about what I'm doing.
Awesome. Well, we're going to link that up on the show notes. We really want to thank you for breaking out a few minutes today, tonight, during bath time with the daughter, to come on the show and be this week's Modern Leader. Thank you for all you do.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right, my friends and fellow superheroes, what did you think of that? You know, I really love sitting down with Jeff. I love, obviously, you know me, I love talking about Marvel. I love talking about superheroes, comic books, movies, anything like that. But I also love to apply it to business, to leadership, to all the great things that we as leaders are trying to accomplish. And I know that the listeners of this podcast, you know, we're doing a lot of things. We're authentic. We're transparent. We're trying to lead with love or be lovable leaders, as that's defined by Jeff. I know we're trying to do this and it can be tough, right? I mean, sometimes we fail, sometimes we succeed, but I love that we're trying. And I really think that that's the purpose of this podcast, is just to encourage you to keep being you, to work hard at building your business, to have the confidence and the passion in what you're doing and really take it to the next level. Of course, everything that we talked about and how to connect with Jeff, you can find over on the show notes for this 300th episode of the Modern Leadership Podcast. What a celebration. 300 episodes in the bag now. Episode 300 can be found at jakeacarlson.com/ML300. And over on that site, you'll be able to connect with Jeff, find out everything that we're doing, and really celebrate with us these 300 episodes that we have. Thank you for being along for the journey. Thanks for joining us. And we'll see you next week, right? I mean, I want to wish you the very best of days. I want to wish you a very impressive and exciting life. And of course, remember, everything is figure outable. Thanks for listening to the Modern Leadership Podcast. You can find me on Facebook at Speaker Jake, on Twitter at Jake A. Carlson, and of course the website, jakeacarlson.com. See you there.